crashing down to join its companion. Kratos's fist repeatedly smashed into the back of its head until it was reduced to dust. Kratos kicked the magic shields aside. He started to continue on his way when screams from inside a building drew him to peer through the open door. A man and woman clung to each other as an undead legionnaire drew twin knives and clacked them together, as though savoring their terror. Using the pommel of his sword, Kratos rapped sharply on the doorframe. The undead glanced over its shoulder, then back at the man and woman. When it turned its face once more toward the ghost of Sparta, it discovered only the edges of the blades of chaos in the final instant before being cut in two from collarbone to crotch. Kratos stepped back and let the pieces fall. The legs kicked at him feebly. He ignored them.
"We are truly blessed by the gods," said the man. "You have saved us."
"You're not saved. I have only delayed your death a moment or two." Kratos turned to go. "Your energy would be better spent in running away."
"We were paying tribute to Aphrodite," the woman offered, showing him a small carved wood box in her palms. It was filled with vials of fragrant oils.
"You should be on the walls, defending your city."
"There is always time for tribute," she said, looking at her man, who was obviously an artisan and not a soldier.
"Maybe for you," he growled, and strode away toward the street.
Before his sandal could touch the paving stones, Athens vanished before his eyes. The world shimmered about him, and he felt as if he might be soaring into the sky. Brightness blossomed into blinding imperial glory, and out from that Olympian splendor appeared a woman of such full-bodied perfection that the sight of her hit him harder than any foe ever had. Kratos had to clear his throat twice before he could speak.
"Lady Aphrodite."
"Greetings, Spartan. I wish to bestow upon you my thanks for the rescue of my disciples."
"Goddess," Kratos managed to choke out, bowing his head. "It is an honor to serve you."
He coughed and cleared his throat again.
"However you might desire."
"Kratos." Aphrodite spoke his name as softly as a lover's caress. "Zora and Laura have spoken of your talents."
"Zora and Laura?" Kratos blinked. "The twins? They speak to you?"
"Not as often as they should," the goddess of love purred. "But then, every parent has a similar complaint, I suppose."
"You're their mother?"
This explained so many different things at once about the twins that Kratos found himself with no idea of what to say next. One slender finger from that slim hand traced the curve of his lips to silence any comment. "Athena asked me to contribute a gift of my own, to aid you in your quest."
"The only gift I need is freedom to complete my task."
Her laugh was like the chime of silver bells. "What you need, Spartan, is to be grateful for whatever a god chooses to bestow." She caressed his cheek gently. The fingers turned cold as they stroked. "You will perform a task for me as well."
"I am already engaged."
"You will slay the Queen of the Gorgons."
Kratos frowned. "Why her? Why now?"
"You are so adorable," the goddess purred, "that I won't have you eviscerated for daring to question me. This time, you must kill Medusa and bring me her head. The gift I will bestow on you is the power of the Gorgons, to turn men to stone." The goddess gestured, and with a wave wiped away tranquil Olympus. Kratos tried to speak, but had no breath, tried to see, but had no light. He tried to move, and did not know if the wild, whirling chaos he experienced was all around him, or inside his head, or both. He crouched in a cold, dark place, and heard the soft hissing of snakes. He stood. The sooner he satisfied Aphrodite's thirst for Gorgon blood, the sooner he could return to Athens and find the oracle. The gloom around him hid the slithering serpents. He took a few blind steps to one side, sloshing through ankle-deep water. His hand found a slimy rock wall. Pressing his ear against the wall, he waited through many slow, measured breaths in an attempt to detect any vibrations. Nothing. He sighed. What had he expected? That Aphrodite would just point and make Medusa appear in front of him? As his eyes adjusted to the murkiness, he began to make out his surroundings. The goddess had transported him to the juncture of three low-roofed tunnels hewn from living rock. No light shone down any of the tunnels. The light by which he now saw was the product of faintly luminescent moss clinging to crevices in the rock. The tunnel straight ahead proved to be a dead end. Kratos shoved hard against the wall, blocking his progress. His anger mounted. More wasted time. The Oracle was in danger of death, or worse, if Ares captured her. Kratos didn't care if the Oracle lived or died, so long as he learned her secret. Kratos recalled campfire discussions among his officers before battle. Some impious types had been speculating that the gods needed human worship the way a tree needs the sun. Could a god exist without worshippers? The way things were going in Athens, Kratos guessed he just might find out. Would Athena's power decline? Would she simply disappear? Zeus might prohibit one god from killing another, but Ares might have found a way to sneak around the ban. In the past, Ares had always chosen brute force over subtlety, but perhaps he had learned his lesson. While the siege of Athens had the trappings of Ares's old rage, he might have a different strategy in mind. Kill Athenians, and Athena lost followers. Kill enough, and her worshippers might abandon her for other gods. And who better to worship than the god of war, who had defeated their goddess? Shows of strength in this uncertain world brought people to Ares's temples. Kratos had, once upon a time, been the author of many of those shows, and had himself been the earthly symbol of Ares's might. Kratos's officers had believed that a god without worshippers simply faded away like mist in the morning sun. If such a fate befell Athena, Kratos's only chance for vengeance upon his former master would evaporate with her. And the nightmares would continue unabated, rending sanity. A few more blows upon the wall proved that it would withstand even his prodigious strength. Kratos turned and retraced his path. The water ahead began to ripple ominously before he reached the juncture where Aphrodite had deposited him. Kratos had to bend almost double to slide the Blades of Chaos off his back and bring them down in front of him, barely in time. Up from the dark waters struck a serpent, whose head was larger than Kratos's fist. Its fangs flashed as it struck. The venom dripping from their needle tips smoked in the gloom and caused the water where it fell to boil. Kratos blocked the strike with one blade while he struck back with the other. The snake's head and a span of its neck flipped through the air. Its body thrashed wildly as it died, but the head continued to snap at him, its black eyes glaring with malice. Kratos pressed both blade tips into the head and waited for the viciousness to fade and die. Eventually it did. He looked up in time to see more ripples approaching, snakes swimming just under the murky surface, too many for him to avoid. One caught him, its fangs driving hard into his greaves, chewing as though it thought to drive its fangs through the heavy bronze. Kratos didn't wait to find out if it was right. The pommel of a blade crushed a fragile skull. The fangs and jawbone remained clamped on his greave. The water ahead boiled as more snakes swarmed toward him, too many to count. Kratos slashed repeatedly down into the water in front of him, a blinding flourish that turned the blades into a shield of death. He drove grimly forward until he reached the juncture again. The water churned crimson with the snake's blood, and then the water calmed. The dripping of moisture off the walls was all he could hear. Kratos looked into the water and saw movement, but not of snakes. He lifted his foot and brought it down, thinking to crush any creature just below the surface. He felt his foot slide into the outline of a boot cut into the stone. Curious, he scooted his other sandaled foot about and found a corresponding indentation. For a moment he stood with both feet in the underwater impressions. As he started to step forward, he felt a tiny vibration that built and passed upward until it shook the chains embedded in his wrists. Kratos saw the phosphorescent moss writhing on the walls. He lifted one foot from its indentation, and the moss stopped glowing. Replacing his foot caused the moss to glow once more. Curious, he reached out to touch the moss. Like a snake, it writhed sinuously away from his fingers. He growled deep in his throat. It was the only sound, save the slow drip of moisture. Stabbing out with his finger, he forced the animated moss to go around his digit. It spun about, encircling the spot on the stone wall where he pressed, as if the moss showed him an exit from an otherwise featureless tunnel. Leaning slightly, he applied pressure. Nothing happened. He stepped from the outlines under his feet, and the moss ceased glowing. Kratos stomped to the end of the tunnel and found only another blank wall. Extensive investigation proved to him that there was no exit from the subterranean tunnels, none that he could find. He reached for both of the blades of chaos, then stopped.
Two hands. There might be something in using two hands.
He returned to the indentation, slipped his feet into them, and moved his finger around on the right wall until the moss once more circled one specific spot. He pressed. Nothing. Reaching to the other wall and repeating the movement produced another curlicue of green glowing moss. This time he moved his finger about and found a spot much higher on that wall before the moss stopped writhing and presented him with a specific spot. Kratos pressed outward, fingers probing each of the marked spots.
"Mighty Zeus," he whispered.
His eyes went wide when a portion of the ceiling began to descend. Rather than jump back to defend himself, he stood his ground until the trap door had opened and lowered, giving him a ladder leading upward. Moving his fingers from the spots and stepping quickly, he reached the ladder just as it began to retreat aloft. Hanging on, he let the closing trap door carry him upward into a room whose floor was a foot above a sluggishly flowing stream. A channel of tightly placed stones held the stream in place. He shook himself dry. The snake, with its fangs buried in his greaves, came free when he scraped down his shin armor with the edge of his blade. He had not even realized it still clung to him with such tenacity. These poisonous water snakes were nothing compared with the prey he sought. Not only must he face a monster who would turn him to stone if he so much as glanced at her face, he had to find one Gorgon in particular. Queen Medusa ruled her sisters, but unless she wore a crown or carried a scepter, Kratos had no simple way of picking her out from the rest. Sandals scraped against stone as someone approached along the dry tunnel ahead. He raised the blades, but some primitive instinct warned him not to fight. Wit, for once, might bring victory, just as he had discovered the secret way into this lair. Kratos backed off and tucked himself from ankle to neck into a shallow stony niche lined with empty shelves. Other such niches pocked the chamber's walls, but most of those had shelves stocked with objects. It seemed a fair guess that whoever came would fetch the items in storage and thus not even bother to look at a niche they knew to be empty. And if he was wrong, he still had the blades. They would find this particular cabinet fully stocked with swift and bloody death. Two men entered. One, a crookback, led the other, an old man who wore a filthy rag tied across his eyes. They began selecting items from nooks and crannies. The crookback laded the blind man with two boxes for every one of his own.
"My back is breaking from the load," the crookback complained. "Carry another for me, will you? I can hardly stand, Jur, but go and pile it on. We daren't make two trips. We cannot be late or Queen Medusa will punish us both." "Again," Jur said, "once a day is more than I can bear.
My back festers from the beatings she gives us. He stacked several more heavy boxes onto the other's considerable load, while keeping only a pair of light ones for himself. Kratos watched as they left, the blind man crushed by his load, while the crookback showed a sprightly astride. Kratos cared nothing for this. Clearly there were two sorts of people in this underground maze, those who did all the work, and those who could see. Being one of the latter made Kratos disinclined to disrupt the arrangement. The only sound Kratos made when he followed was the faint squish of water squeezing from his sandals. As he went, he scratched trail markers in the luminescent moss. If he succeeded, he might have to find his own way out of here. Maybe Aphrodite would just snatch him back to Athens, but maybe he was required to return to where she had deposited him originally. He had never lost by preparing against betrayal, especially by gods.
"Bring me my meal, you disgusting vermin!"
This was a new voice, coming from a chamber ahead, where a lamp held back the gloom. Kratos stopped and pressed himself into the shadows outside the archway. Though the voice had been low and rough, like rocks being shaken in a brass jug, he caught some hint of inflection that told him the speaker might be female. If he was right, a careless glance would doom him to an eternity as a stone statue, taunted by gorgons in this twilight perdition. The sighted man, Jur, replied,
"At once, Lady Medusa. I have brought the supplies."
"You?"
the blind man began.
"I brought the—" "Shh! Shut your vile human mouths and get to work. My sisters and I grow hungrier by the moment, and angrier."
Her voice took on a dangerous edge.
"It puts me in the mood for punishment."
"Oh," the blind man whined under his breath. "Oh, Zeus, strike me dead before she touches me once more."
"At least you can't see, you lucky bastard," Jur snarled back just as softly. "Those mirrors, those accursed mirrors in her bedroom. Every way she turns, she can see her hideous self." Clanking of pots and the sounds of a fire being stoked lured Kratos into a quick look. He flicked a glance swifter than a blink, but he took in the entire kitchen. The blind man decanted some kind of jugged meat into a bathtub-sized cauldron, while Jur built the cooking fire beneath it. It looked as if the Queen of the Gorgons favored spring lamb. No, those weren't lambs, Kratos realized, as a cold knot formed in his belly. They were human infants. Kratos balled his fists, wanting to strike out at such horrific fare. Children, human children, like his own daughter, his dear daughter, who— He stepped out, but forced himself back into hiding until the proper moment. His rage mounted at a cannibalistic meal, feeding his need to destroy the Gorgons. Taking Medusa's head had been decreed by Aphrodite. He would take grim pleasure in it, command from a goddess or not. Shortly the blind man loaded a huge trencher full of steaming baby stew and shuffled off toward a darkened archway across the small kitchen. Jur watched him go, then cat-footed over to the vast kettle, snatched a ladle, and dipped a scoop, holding it up to his nose to capture the aroma.
"That old blind bastard is finally learning to cook," Jur muttered, bringing the ladle to his lips.
But before he could taste the baby stew, an enormous hand seized the back of his neck and yanked him into the air. He dropped the ladle into the tureen and tried to yell, but the hand around his neck crushed his voice down to a squeak. He struggled, kicking his legs and clawing at the hand, but the ash-white skin seemed harder than bronze. He found himself a moment later turned so that he was face to face with the ghost of Sparta. His eyes went wider and rounder, and a strangled croak worked its way up between Kratos's fingers.
"Medusa," Kratos whispered. "Where? Just point. Point, and I'll let you go."
Through frantic waving of his hands, Jor managed to indicate that the bedchamber of the Queen of the Gorgons was the first door to the right along the darkened hall. Kratos nodded. One quick squeeze crushed Jor's voice box so that he couldn't scream, and so that Kratos wouldn't have to listen to any pathetic begging. Kratos lifted this baby chef above the bath-sized cauldron of boiling stew, and then, true to his word, let him go. Kratos knew that he was most in danger in the first instant of entering the Gorgon Queen's chamber. If he mistook the real Medusa for one of the reflections and found himself looking upon her face, he wouldn't get a second chance. Fortune favors the bold, he thought, and charged. With a pantherish leap, Kratos sprang through the opposite archway, reaching the door to Medusa's chamber only an instant behind the blind man. The blind man balanced the trencher unsteadily on one hand while he opened the door with the other. Hearing Kratos behind him, the blind man half-turned. "Jur?" was all he had time to say before Kratos snatched the trencher, and with a mighty kick sent the blind man flying into the middle of the chamber beyond. Kratos took care to look only at the ceiling. Jur had not lied. He had not even come close to telling the full story. Mirrors paneled the walls. Even more mirrors stretched from side to side along the ceiling. The mirrors there showed the blind man ploughing straight into the hideous monster. Before either of them had a chance to react, the snakes that were Medusa's hair instantly unbraided themselves and struck at the blind man as one, latching onto his entire body and chewing on him as the water snake had chewed on Kratos's greave. The snakes writhed as the blind man went into convulsions, and they clamped him to Medusa's face. Gut-churning at the reflected sight, Kratos decided he didn't need the rest of his plan. Three quick steps sent him past the dying man and the Gorgon, who shrieked in rage as she tried to claw the hapless slave from her face. Just as she finally succeeded in pushing him away, her head lifted, and in the mirrored wall she saw her death standing at her back. Kratos sprang into the air, striking downward with both feet and driving the monster face first to the chamber floor. At the same instant, the blades of chaos flashed in a converging slash that sheared through both collarbones and the back of her upper ribs. Kratos released the blades and reached down into the wound with both hands. Driving his fingers into the slimy mess of Gorgon tissue, he caught hold of her spine and with one mighty wrench ripped her head from her body. Her head snake struck at his arm, but weakly. Their venom had been expended on the blind man. He paused for a moment, regarding the reflection of her deadly gaze in the mirror. Those fearsome eyes, the tusk-like fangs, hair of living snakes. Kratos arched his back as the feeling of sudden upward movement seized him once more. From the dim, moss-lit subterranean chambers, he was transported to a place of dazzling, brilliant white. "You have done well, my Spartan." "I'm not your Spartan," he thought, but he said only, "Lady Aphrodite?" He used his free hand to shade his eyes against the glare, and then could barely make out the diaphanous house silks that clung invitingly to the goddess's body. She took the severed head from his hands, holding it by its now-dead hair snakes. "Lady Aphrodite, are you finished with me?"
"Oh, yes. One last thing now that I have made certain you have completed your mission for me." "Here," she said, holding out Medusa's severed head, its face carefully turned away. "Take it by the snakes. That's right. Careful you don't look into its eyes yourself. Now, sling it back over your shoulder as if you were putting away one of those impressively large swords you wear on your back."
Kratos did so, and felt the snakes evaporate from his grasp.
"What happened? Where did it go?"
"It will be there when you want it. Just reach back for it, and it will be in your hand, turned the right way, and ready to petrify."
"How does that work?"
"It's magic. One more thing you should know. Being dead diminishes Medusa's power."
"People won't turn to stone?"
Oh, they will. They just won't stay that way for very long.
Kratos stared directly at Aphrodite, waiting for the full explanation.
10 seconds from a full blast from the eyes, and whatever you do, don't lose it.
Aphrodite spread her hands and regarded him closely.
Athena wants it when you're done. She has some use for it. Something about a shield. Maybe a cloak? Well, no matter. You have destroyed the Queen of the Gorgons, and now her power is yours.
In an instant she towered above him like a mountain, as though her hair might brush the moon, and her voice rang like a great bronze bell.
"Freeze and destroy them all with Medusa's gaze," the goddess thundered. "Go with the gods, Kratos. Go forth in the name of Olympus." Before he could draw breath to reply, he was in Athens once more.
Ares still towered above the Acropolis, casting house-sized gobbets of Greek fire on every side. When Kratos recovered his bearings, he found himself once more in the quieter neighborhood from which the goddess had taken him. He was still on the far side of the Acropolis from Athena's temple and from her oracle. He put his head down and ran like the lion in pursuit of a lamb, swift as a falcon, tireless as the wind. He had to run. So much time had been wasted, and for what? A power he didn't need, a power that had nothing to do with finding the oracle, nor with defeating the god of war. If Aphrodite had really wanted to help him, she would have set him down at the door of Athena's temple and put the oracle in his lap.
Gods and their games! He was sick of all of them. Once he killed Ares, he would be done with them and their insane demands.
And the nightmares would be banished from his sleep, from his every waking instant, forever.
9. Smoke rolled down from the heights of the Acropolis, a black, greasy pall that smothered the Parthenon on the mountainside and came near to strangling Kratos. The tough armor he'd taken from the undead legionnaires shielded him from the killing heat of the flames and protected his Ares-burned back, but it couldn't help him breathe. Choking, gasping for air, he had to turn back and seek a clearer way toward the summit. None of the war god's fireballs had yet touched this particular neighborhood, but the area had not escaped the attentions of Ares's legions. There were bands of roving monsters of all descriptions, combinations of minotaurs and centaurs for cavalry, cyclopes for heavy infantry, skeleton archers, legionnaires, harpies, wraiths. And what was that? The creatures looked like hideous women with a single long snake's tail instead of legs. Writhing serpents crowned their heads, and crackling green beams of power poured out from their eyes. It seemed that the death of their queen had brought the rest of the Gorgons into the fight. But all of Greece knew there had been only 3 Gorgons, Sithino, Euryale, and, of course, the recently deceased Medusa. Yet Kratos saw a dozen of the repulsive creatures, and he had no doubt that others were spreading through the city at that very instant. Killing them would feed his anger and give him momentary distraction from the ever-present nightmare fluttering at the edge of his mind, but that would only be a waste of time that he and the Oracle could not spare. A permanent solution to his visions awaited. He hunted for a clear path to Athena's Oracle. Kratos ducked into an alley and scrambled up a rain barrel from which he could swing himself onto a balcony and clamber up another story or two to the roof. Athens burned. Save only the neighborhood around him, the entire city was in flames. Now and then he caught sight of the long walls through the smoke. The flash of firelight off brandished weapons told him that soldiers still wasted their lives in a futile attempt to hold a wall that no longer defended the city. Everybody had to die somewhere. If defending their useless wall gave them the illusion of dying for a noble cause, who was he to gainsay their futile heroism? Men had died under his slashing blades for less. Kratos progressed slowly across the rooftop, scouting for a path to follow uphill. He moved with caution to avoid attracting the attention of the harpies that swooped hither and thither through the smoke.
The old man at the gates had said the oracle's chamber was on the east side of the Parthenon. Across the face of the Acropolis, he could pick out faint brown tendrils that might be footpaths, but the billowing smoke clouded them and hid other avenues entirely. When he moved to the edge of the roof to get a better view, an arrow sang past his ear. Kratos fell flat and let more arrows sail over him. He chanced a quick look over the edge of the roof and located a handful of undead archers who'd taken a nearby balcony for their vantage point. Kratos saw a man venture into the street, only to take an arrow through the belly, and when the arrow detonated, the blast of flame splattered the man's guts across the front of his own house. The archers held fire only when they could find no further targets. Kratos ducked when a new ball of Greek fire exploded a quarter mile away, roughly where he thought the road leading to the summit of the Acropolis might turn upward. A grim picture painted itself within his mind. Athena's worshippers would naturally run for the Parthenon when they found their city under attack by the god of war. Ares had sown fire across the whole city, sparing only this quarter, through which ran the road up the Acropolis, which would naturally draw those worshippers like flies to turds. Then the god had his monsters patrolling the streets, preventing further movement. Kratos understood. The god of war was deliberately funneling the most pious and devoted of Athena's flock into one small area of the city, making it look as if this was the safest area as well as the only route to the temple of their goddess. Instead of fleeing into the countryside, where tracking them down and slaughtering them would be a daunting task even for Ares's minions, they were packing themselves into the illusory safety of this single neighborhood, concentrating where they could most easily be destroyed, all at once. No fuss, no mess, no chasing people through the forest or rooting them out of mountain caves. The citizens of Athens had made of themselves nothing more than cattle rushing to the slaughterhouse floor. It was brutal, and he knew it would be very effective. He'd done this sort of thing himself. Kratos grabbed his temples to keep his head from exploding as an image burned hotter than the sun through his brain. No, it couldn't be. The dead, those he had slaughtered in Athena's temple. Guilty. He had killed. Gasping, Kratos forced the horrible vision away. It seized him more powerfully each time, but giving in to the horror wasn't going to make reaching the Parthenon any easier. He could conquer his own nightmares for a short while, but it seemed the monsters were gathering on the streets below to block his path, and he knew those undead archers hadn't forgotten he was up here. He had to move, fast. On the other hand, he saw no reason to surrender the high ground. Three strides for momentum took him to the lip of the roof, and a mighty leap sent him hurtling over the street to the opposite roof. The skeleton archers below were so startled, none of them got off a shot. As he sprinted along, he heard the commanding bellow of a minotaur, and he knew he'd been seen by the forces below. His next jump drew a scatter of fire arrows, though none came close, and he could see undead legionnaires mounted on the backs of centaurs racing parallel to his path on the streets below. Another rooftop and another leap, and harpies began to swoop and dive at him. He dodged and ducked across roof after roof without slowing, using the blades as grapnels to swing himself over gaps too wide to bridge, and whirling them about his head as he ran to keep the harpies at bay. He sprinted from roof to roof, running faster than the harpies could pursue, but the shouts and bellows of the monsters below came even faster. Not even Kratos could outrun the speed of sound. More of Ares's creatures streamed toward him, and he leaped from the last house of the neighborhood and dived once again into the fires and smoke of the rest of the city. One minotaur had the bright idea of calling for all cyclopes, centaurs, and other minotaurs to forget about trying to catch the racing Spartan. Instead, they should batter the walls of the burning buildings, weakening every structure in Kratos's path. Battling the strangling smoke and roasting flames, Kratos jumped to a rooftop which collapsed under his weight. A frantic scrabble at the structure beneath the splintered roof tiles, and a swift overhead whip of a blade of chaos, which embedded it in a more solid rooftop ahead, gained him enough purchase to keep aloft. A quick glance below at the countless enemies of all descriptions crowding there told him in no uncertain terms the outcome of an unlucky fall. Grimly he ran on, knowing that each rooftop would prove more fragile than the last, and even if he could stay up there all the way to the foot of the Acropolis, he would then have to descend to the streets and either deal with his pursuers or be slaughtered along with all these useless Athenians. Better a nameless death, being swallowed by the Hydra in the grave of ships, than having his corpse burned in the same fires as those of his people's most bitter enemy. Along the base of the sheer cliffs below the Acropolis, Kratos raced parallel to the rock, making for the roadway. These buildings were sturdier, as they had the support of the rock wall at their back, and keeping close to the cliff face as he rounded the curve let him gain ground on his pursuers. There, a gap in the greasy smoke showed him the broad flagstones of the roadway just ahead. With redoubled energy, Kratos hurled himself toward it. But only 3 houses short of the open ground he craved, roof tiles crumbled, and the fire-weakened walls of the building collapsed around him. Worse, his charred, blistered back betrayed him. His usual strength had faded, and twisting about sent knives of pain into his shoulders, which prevented him from saving himself from the fall. By the time he found his feet and shook himself free of the rubble, they were on him. Undead legionnaires rushed him, swords drawn. The blades of chaos found first his hands, then their necks. More pressed in behind, and Kratos leaned into them. He drove his way forward as though they were only earth. He was a miner, and the blades were his picks and shovels. Contemptuously he stepped over their halved bodies. Kratos found more legionnaires in the broad courtyard. These took a little more effort to dispatch, but he did so, regretting every second he wasted in mindless slaughter. He made for the street, only to encounter more monsters at the gate. 3 cyclopes growled and swung their prodigious war clubs. Any impact would have spattered his brains all over the street, but that wasn't what worried Kratos. Even when they missed him, those clubs knocked huge holes in the walls. The already fragile structure shuddered with every blow. On the rooftops above the courtyard, skeletal archers clattered into place, beginning a rain of flaming arrows to cut off any hope of retreat. One brief glance over his shoulder was enough to escalate his sense of peril. Now, coming up to support the Cyclopes, were 6 Minotaurs, spreading to fill all gaps. They came for him, all at once. Pinned between the archers and the combination force of Minotaurs and Cyclopes, he saw no way out. But he wasn't ready to die, not yet.
"Come on, then," he roared. "Come and die."
Kratos blocked an axe blow from one Minotaur and lunged, catching a Cyclops behind the hamstring. A slash hobbled the monster, but as he limped back, the other 2 crowded close to join the battle. Kratos slipped out from under another earth-shaking club blow from a Cyclops and began a steady parry. The Minotaurs had ditched their axes in favor of long spears, with which they could strike at him without getting in the way of the Cyclopes. One slip would leave him as full of holes as a cheese grater. They coordinated their attacks like a well-trained, experienced unit. He was only 1 mortal against myriad creatures dragged from Hades, but it was he who attacked.
"Out of my way, or die where you stand," he thundered, and then undertook to make his boast into a simple statement of fact.
Kratos slipped between the Cyclopes and struck a mighty double-bladed blow into the chest of the nearest Minotaur. New strength and power flowed up the chains into his body as the blades drank the man-bull's life. He whirled to hamstring another Cyclops, but the enormous monster was faster than it looked. The one-eyed creature swept its vast club into a rising parry and cleared the blades from between them, then dropped its club and wrapped its arms around Kratos's chest. The Cyclops squeezed until the Spartan's ribs began to crack, and clouds of blackness washed through Kratos's vision. The Cyclops roared its triumph until its lone eye focused on the Spartan's face. Kratos was smiling. The blades came down at the joining of the Cyclops' neck and shoulders, carving a gore-splashing V downward until they met at the creature's monstrous heart. Kratos released the blades to seize the Cyclops' head, which still blinked its eye in astonishment, and then hurled it, along with much of the creature's spine, into the path of the jabbing spears of the Minotaurs. As the rest of the Cyclops' body shuddered and collapsed, Kratos kicked off it into a small gap between the corpse and the stone wall. His victory was short-lived. His battle with the Cyclops, quick as it had been, had allowed the Minotaurs to surround him. Kratos spun in a full circle and saw a dozen of the bull-headed monsters advancing. Even the Blades of Chaos would not slay so many. If he engaged one or two, that many more would attack from behind. He crouched behind the Cyclops' massive body, using it as a battlement, while he reached back over his shoulder, and his hand filled with twisting serpents. The Minotaurs rushed him from every direction. He swung the deathly head of Medusa out before him. Emerald energy crackled out from the Gorgon's dead eyes, and each foe it touched instantly stiffened into cold gray limestone. One Minotaur, caught in mid-thrust, toppled sideways, knocking another to the street, where it shattered like a dropped clay pot. Kratos sprang to action. 10 seconds was all he had. The blades flashed out, and where they struck, the statue shattered. Kratos leaped up to the shoulders of the one remaining Cyclops and kicked himself up and out again, toppling the frozen creature, whose weight crushed its hamstrung brother and the last two Minotaurs. And as Medusa's fell power abated, chunks and shards of petrified monster turned back into meat and bone and blood, a sprawl of carnage that filled the street. "Lady Aphrodite," Kratos murmured, "I should never have doubted." A whisper, hardly more than a zephyr in the tumult, came beguilingly to his ear. "Perhaps some day I'll let you apologize. Personally." He released Medusa's head back over his shoulder, sheathed the blades, and ran as though all the forces of Hades snapped at his heels. Which they did. Dodging, he went uphill, although he found no easy path toward the Parthenon. It seemed that all the mountain burned. The acres atop the Acropolis flamed with the fury of a new sun. "Helios," Kratos wondered aloud, "have you joined my enemies?" Athena had enlisted the aid of powerful allies, but Ares might have Olympian aid as well. The political intrigues of Mount Olympus were mysterious and deadly for any mortals caught up in them. He wasn't too concerned. He had sworn 10 years ago that whatever dared to stand between him and his vengeance would be destroyed, whether it be man, beast, or god. Anyone who wanted to live had better stay out of his way. He started up a narrow street that looked promising, but then mist swirled out of nowhere in front of him. He swatted at it with his right-hand blade, but the mist formed a thicker cloud just beyond his reach. Kratos settled the blades into a fighting grip. Whatever new threat this might prove to be, he would destroy it as he had all the others. When the mist flowed and took the shape of a thin column, he swung as hard as he could. The blade passed through the mist, leaving not so much as a swirl to mark its passage. He was debating whether he should use the rage of Poseidon or if Medusa's gaze might give this mist enough form for him to strike. Before he had decided, the mist solidified into a tall, beautiful woman wearing little more than thin streamers of cloud for a skirt, and a top wrapped around her bodice but once. The material was as transparent as the mist, but even as he watched, she became more substantial. Some sort of succubus? A siren? It didn't matter. She looked solid enough now. He slashed into the woman with a strike that would cut a mortal in half. She did not appear to notice. "Do not fear, Kratos. I am the Oracle of Athens, here to help you defeat Ares. Revealed in my divinations are secrets unknown even to the gods. Find my temple to the east, and I will show you how to murder a god."
"Oracle, wait!"
Kratos dropped the blades and stared through the once again empty space. He looked up the hill toward where the oracle had pointed. A misty gesture, vagrant air currents. How could he know? The path narrowed quickly, but he kept climbing. When he reached a spot halfway up, he looked back over Athens and shook his head in dismay. The fighting was nearly over. Ares roared with evil mirth, bellowing flame like a volcano, as his army flowed like the sea through the streets of Athens.
"God of war," Kratos said through his teeth, "I have not forgotten you. For what you did that night, this city will be your grave."
An earthquake shook the city center. Kratos had to stop and widen his stance in order to keep his feet. Smoke from the burning buildings cleared for a moment to give him a direct view of Ares himself. The huge god stepped over the long wall and strode up the causeway, stepping on Athenians too slow to escape his advance. The war god roared, shaking the heavens and the earth. He reached down, caught a soldier, and flicked him away as he might an annoying bug. The screams were thin and high, and then died along with the man when he crashed into the roof of a temple devoted to Zeus. Then Ares began stamping on any who caught his eye, his fury palpable. Ares rampaged through the city, crushing buildings and kicking away people in the square. The city was entirely at the mercy of the god of war, and mercy was in short supply. Ares had no more mercy than he did compassion or self-restraint. It was a bad night to be Athenian. Kratos was a Spartan. Was there ever a good night to be Athenian? He turned his back on Ares and followed the roadway upward onto the Acropolis. Another earthquake took him off his feet, forcing him to roll clear as a stone wall collapsed beside him. Kratos climbed back to his feet to look into the city. Ares had drawn a sword the size of 10 warships and raised it high above his head. The god of war brought it crashing down again with such force that houses for blocks around crumbled as the shockwave spread throughout the city. Ares delivered another blow, but this time Kratos was braced for it. He turned back to his path and set out toward the Parthenon.
"They come! They're coming!"
A woman on the roof of a nearby temple shrieked the warning, then scrambled down a rickety ladder to the sacristy's front door. An undead archer fired from among Kratos's pursuers. The shaft pinned the woman to the wood frame, which caught fire as the arrow exploded. Kratos ducked and shifted aside when he heard a furious flapping of wings that he knew all too well. But he was not this harpy's target. The foul beast swooped down to pluck at a woman running with a child in her arms. The harpy grabbed the child and carried it aloft. The woman screamed and threw rocks, but the harpy soared upward to hundreds of feet. Then it let the child drop.
"No!"
Kratos raged. He took a step and reached out, as if he could keep the child safe. He couldn't. A vision of his beloved daughter filled his eyes, and then blood replaced the vision. Again. The woman frantically tried to catch her infant, racing toward it with arms outstretched, only to see her child's brains dashed out on the rubble of another temple. The harpy swooped low again, this time clawing at the woman. She fought off the flying monster, but tripped on a broken flagstone. Kratos raced forward, and then leaped with all his prodigious strength. His fingers slipped away from the harpy's wing, but caught a taloned foot. The harpy screeched in rage and fought to break free. Rage at the child's death lent Kratos the raw determination to clutch down hard enough to drag the harpy from the sky. The hideous creature crashed to the ground, only feet from where the child had perished. A twist, a turn, and Kratos worked up to where he could smash his fist into the harpy's face. He continued to pummel the monster until only pulp remained. Panting, he held the scrawny neck in his grip, then cast the corpse away so its foul blood would not mingle with that of the fallen child.
"Help me! Help me!" the bereft woman called to Kratos. "A trap door inside! Safety! Sanctuary is yours if you will help me!"
The harpies had seen the fate of their companion and converged, thinking the woman was the easiest victim to slay. Kratos let his revulsion for what crimes the harpies committed decide the matter for him. Swinging the blades of chaos, he charged. The first stroke took off a pinion. The second severed a clawed foot. A double swipe of his blades removed one harpy's head from its bird-like sloping shoulders.
"Go," he said to the woman. "Find your refuge."
The woman did not plead with him to join her. Another harpy screeched as it swooped like a falcon. Kratos sprang into the air, hurling himself and his blades at the creature, but he was just too far away to reach it. The woman took the full strike on her back. Vicious claws opened bloody gashes, and then the harpy beat downward with its wings and plucked the woman's spine from her body. What remained fell lifeless to the ground. Kratos ran, jumped onto an overturned crate, and launched himself through the air in a burst of furious attack. One blade sheared through the harpy's face, from her mouth to her ear. The second blade sliced through her breastbone almost without resistance, opening its monstrous heart to spew black blood across the streets below. Man and harpy fell heavily to the ground. Kratos rolled free, jerked the chains around his forearms, and brought the blades of chaos whistling back to hand.
There he is! Kill him! Kill him for Lord Ares!
Charging toward him were a dozen minotaurs, followed by six cyclopes, and half a hundred undead legionnaires, and behind them were still more. They choked the road. He could never fight his way clear. It appeared his quest was about to end in a sudden and bloody failure. He drew his blades. He was Spartan. Just because he could not win was no reason to quit. 10. Athena stared down into the broad, scrying pool below the throne of Zeus. A few ripples crossed it, but these came from the gusts swirling through Olympus. With a gesture, Athena stilled the waters, so that they became clear as the sky. She bent forward to get a better view as Kratos unleashed Medusa's gaze.
"Your mortal fights well."
Athena looked up. Her father had willed himself once more onto his throne, where he now leaned forward, peering intently into the pool. Could it be that Zeus showed the faintest hint of satisfaction? Even Athena could not read the face of the Lord of Olympus for certain, but she dared hope. She moved to one side, the better to keep one eye on the pool while she tried to fully decipher his expression. "I did not realize you were following the battle."
"Slaughter," Zeus said, "is mightily diverting. It has been many years since we've had such fine, wanton destruction."
"Ares brings it to my beloved city," Athena said, a catch in her voice. "But Kratos' savagery comes from Ares. He is what my brother has made of him."
"He may be a bit more than that," the Lord of Olympus murmured. "You know, the sack of Athens is shaping up to be an epic poem. You should ask Apollo to compose an ode, perhaps. Commemorate the occasion. Doesn't have to be anything so elaborate as Homer's tale of Troy. After all, Troy stood against all of Greece for 10 years. Athens hasn't lasted 10 days. Nonetheless, many of your soldiers are managing to die heroically. And then there's your Kratos."
The Sky Father pointed to the scrying pool, which reflected Kratos's battle against a flight of harpies.
"His furious quest for vengeance. One tiny mortal against the god of war? Very nice, really. I couldn't have done it better myself."
"High praise, my lord father. Perhaps the highest I've ever received."
She didn't let it go to her head, because Zeus, premier among the other Olympians, was a deep planner. Athena wondered at his interest now, and if he worked his own subtle plans. Whatever the machinations, her Kratos played a prominent role. "I am gratified you are taking such an interest in the struggle, father. Would it be too bold for me to ask if your interest arises from the struggle itself?"
"My dear daughter, this is not about you. It had better not be. This is your only mortal against Ares' mob of horrors raked from the dregs of Hades. That Kratos has survived so far makes this a bit more interesting than certain gods had been expecting."
"Do you favor Kratos?" Zeus turned pensive, running fingers through the wisps of his cloud beard. Athena tried to read the thoughts behind his eyes and could not. She caught her breath when her father spoke, his words slow and obviously carefully chosen.
"My son shows increasing disrespect, and that distresses me. He kills your worshippers in Athens, but that is to be expected."
Athena started to point out that Ares also singled out Zeus's worshippers, destroying the Sky Father's temples and corrupting sacrifices to win his favor, but she saw that he already understood this.
"Ares's hubris grows with every victory. Do what you can to support Kratos, if your mortal can bring about a greater humility by thwarting Ares."
"My brother cannot be stopped in this fashion," Athena said, immediately regretting her words. Her passion betrayed her true intentions. "Not directly. Everyone on Olympus knows my support for the valiant when they face impossible odds. Seldom do they win. Poor old Leonidas at Thermopylae, betrayed at the last. But when they triumph, well, even the Lord of Olympus knows how to honor a hero."
"So, would you see Kratos win? What are you suggesting?"
"I suggest nothing," Athena said. "I suggest nothing more than that Kratos can use divine help in his struggle."
"I will not openly oppose Ares, no matter how impudent he has become."
Zeus stroked his beard more fiercely now, lightning bolts dancing through the clouds and leaping from finger to finger. Athena tried to read her father's mood and could not, but she hoped when he spoke next.
"It has always been worrisome to me that the oracles know what I, Lord of Olympus, cannot see with all my powers."
"Perhaps it is for the best," Athena said.
"Best for whom, dear daughter? Best for whom?"
Zeus turned his attention back to the scrying pool and the vast destruction Ares delivered to the city and the people of Athens. The Sky Father leaned still farther forward.
"We're just getting to the good part."
Athena caught her breath as Ares appeared on the battlefield and began to crush Athenians under his sandal. Zeus gestured, and the view dissolved to a vision of Kratos sprinting up the long roadway toward the top of the Acropolis, just as a mortal woman failed to save her infant from a harpy, and another harpy snatched up the woman and savaged her with its talons. "That woman is one of your worshippers," Athena pointed at the bleeding woman. "Do you see?"
Zeus frowned. "Indeed. In fact, she's a priestess. That little building of hers is an inn, consecrated to me in my Zeus Philoxenos role."
"He thinks to destroy my worshippers," she said. "Are you certain this priestess of yours was an accident? Perhaps he has aspirations for a higher throne."
"Please, dear child."
Zeus thrust out his finger and touched the woman just as the harpy ripped out her spine. The ruler of the gods sighed and drew back his finger, now dotted with a single drop of water from the viewing pool. He turned and flicked the water droplet high into the air. It caught a ray of sunlight, turned into a rainbow, then vanished.
"There," he said, looking satisfied. "She will be well judged by Aeacus at the gates of the underworld."
"Why do you intercede in this way for a simple mortal worshipper when you won't allow me to intercede for my thousands?" Zeus's eyes flashed.
"Because I can."
He held her gaze until she had to look away. Then he became once more caught up by the vision reflected in the pool.
"Look there, do you see him? He's killed the harpy. But now a whole company has him cornered. Perfect."
"It is?
Tell me, how many monsters has Kratos destroyed today?"
Athena frowned. "Almost 400. Why?"
"Only 400?" Zeus looked exasperated. "What is his problem? He will never reach your oracle this way."
She had faith in Kratos's prowess. She would have even more if Zeus did not actively oppose him. 11. Monsters came at him from all directions. A Minotaur let out a loud roar and charged ahead of its brothers, swinging a ball and chain over its head. Behind it trotted 11 more and 6 lumbering Cyclopes, and behind them 50 undead heavy infantry. A quick slash of the blades of chaos severed the chain of the Minotaur's weapon, sending the weight at the end flying. Kratos cast a quick glance in the direction the weight had flown, hoping it might take out another of Ares's army. It caught the nearest Cyclops full in the eye. Then the Minotaur was upon him, but Kratos had judged his range to a nicety. He spun the blades in an intersecting flourish. One slash through the Minotaur's throat, while the other carved out the creature's liver. The monster's legs buckled, and it pitched forward onto its face in a last flurry of legs and horns and the spew of blood. Kratos drove both blades down into its skull, and with a wrench of his mighty shoulders shattered the creature's skull and painted its comrades with its brains. Cyclopes pressed in upon him, ponderous clubs upraised. Kratos dove forward and rolled between the bowed legs of the one who'd been blinded by the flying chain weight. Clubs thundered to the ground on all sides, making the very earth tremble. One landed on the blind Cyclops's left foot, crushing its bones with a spray of blood. The wounded monster howled and lifted its foot, holding it with one hand, while its other hand remained clapped to its bleeding eye. The creature hopped about, howling in agony, and Kratos, never slow to press an advantage, kept rolling and diving around the creature's leg, drawing more club blows that only made the Cyclops's howl ramp up in volume. Finally, the monster lashed out with its free hand and somehow seized one of the other's clubs, then began to lay about itself with prodigious energy, actually managing to land a number of powerful whacks on its companions. Kratos gauged his distance and attacked. One thrust went upward into the creature's heart. The razored edge of his other blade cut just behind the Cyclops's knee and caused it to topple onto Kratos. As quick as he was, Kratos found himself unable to get out from under the massive body that struck him and pinned him to the ground. All around he heard Ares's creatures going wild. Helpless under the quivering, dying mass of the Cyclops, he fought to escape. Then he fought for breath. The Cyclops crushed the wind from his lungs. Try as he might, he could not breathe. Kratos heaved, but the beast's bulk was like sand on the beach. It flowed and filled in any space around him. His lungs began to burn. Venting a huge roar, he tried to shove the Cyclops off him, and failed. Rage engulfed Kratos as surely as the Cyclopean flesh. He bit down on the hairy belly, smothering him, and twisted, ripping away the flesh and opening the stomach cavity. A torrent of fluids doubly threatened to suffocate him. The air in his lungs was being used up fast. He bit again, rending intestines and stomach and moving upward like some vile maggot in the Cyclops's guts. He spat and strained, arching his back. His head and shoulders entered the creature's body cavity. Head spinning as the world went black, he heaved again and banged against a mighty rib. Turning to the side, he made one last mighty snap. His teeth closed on the sinewy muscle before he sank back, almost dead. He sputtered and gasped as fetid air reached his nostrils. He spat out the gore in his mouth and gasped in huge draughts. The sky showed through the hole his teeth had ripped in the Cyclops. Kratos shifted from side to side, got his shoulders around, and finally freed one arm that had been pinned under the Cyclops's bulk. Once he reached up and grabbed the rib, he was able to pull, hard. Half the creature's body ripped free. Coated with gore and digestive fluids, Kratos struggled upward and finally tumbled from the Cyclops's side to lie panting on the ground. It was too much to expect that he would not be noticed by Ares's marauding horde. He got to his feet and faced a half-dozen Minotaurs. Still weak and shaking from his excursion through the Cyclops's gut, knowing his physical prowess was inadequate for this fight, Kratos reached back over his shoulder with his left hand. In desperation, he again found the serpent hair of Medusa's head materializing in his grasp. He brought the Gorgon's head whipping forward, its eyes ablaze with emerald fire. The Minotaurs averted their eyes. Kratos sprang straight up to kick the nearest Minotaur behind the ear, which knocked its head forward with such force that one of its horns gored the monster next to him. Kratos left them to sort that out for themselves. He landed in a roll that brought him to a crouch by another's ankle. He grabbed the beast's hoof with both hands and yanked it from its feet. If he had been able to recover his full strength, he could have broken its legs. Instead, the Minotaur slammed to the earth with a painful-sounding thump, but a little bit of pain was a great deal less than Kratos had intended. He stood and dragged the Minotaur with him, getting it in a headlock. Putting his entire body into the move, Kratos twisted so hard he broke the creature's neck. The other Minotaurs began to regroup, sure now that Kratos could not use his magic against them successfully. They looked sideways at him, ready to avert their heads if he produced Medusa's head once more. For Kratos, that was magic better forgotten in favor of the sword. He reached for the Blades of Chaos as the Minotaurs backed away.
"Cowards!" he snarled.
Then he realized the battle was joined by undead infantry with javelins. Needle-pointed steel rained around him. His only escape lay within the building and the trap door that the unfortunate woman had been shouting about. Dripping blood, he backed into the archway of the inn the woman had indicated. To retreat burned him like white-hot iron, but this was not retreat. He was pressing on to complete his mission, to find the Oracle and learn her secret. He kicked the door shut with his heel as he entered, then barred it. Instantly the door began to splinter under repeated blows of the Minotaur's enormous axes, and a javelin whistled through a window to embed in a table a few feet away. The stone and mortar hearth still crackled with cheery flame. If the javelin-impaled table and the sounds from outside could have been ignored, this would have been a pleasant spot to while away an hour or two. A quick scan around the room showed Kratos that this had indeed been some sort of inn, confirmed by multiple representations of Zeus, shown with wide and welcoming arms on the walls. There was even a statue of the King of Olympus set behind an altar beyond the hearth. This statue, like the frescoes around the room, had arms widespread in welcome. The woman had spoken of a trap door, though none was evident, nor were there rugs or floor tiles that might conceal such an exit. Kratos squinted at the hearth. This building had been sanctified to Zeus Philoxenos, the granter of hospitality. Could another part of the structure have been similarly sanctified to Zeus Catachthonios, Zeus the kindly protector underground? Kratos released the blade.